Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the third day of November, Anno Domini. Man, the year is going fast. Mm-hmm. Anno Domini 2018. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Those of you hoping to catch us on YouTube, that should be starting shortly. Steve couldn't find a cable. Steve can't figure out how to unkink a cable.
They weren't tangled when I put them in the bag.
How do they do that?
You're missing the best part of the show, people. This is watching Steve,
entertaining.
Yeah, watching Steve set this up. He does a lot, but it's funny to me. I'm sorry, I'm just amused. All right, let's start with this. So, Apple had a lot to talk about at its special event in Brooklyn on Tuesday. Here are the biggest announcements: a brand new iPad Pro with an edge-to-edge display and no home button. It uses a new Liquid Retina display, like the one found in the iPhone XR, XR, how would you pronounce it? 10R. No. It comes in 11-inch and 12.9-inch configurations, and because it's ditched the home button, it now sports Face ID. Instead of Lightning, God bless Apple, it's Tuesday, we better change all the connectors. Instead of Lightning, the new iPad Pro features support for USB-C, and it's all powered by the new A12X, or is that A1210, Bionic chip.
That was an X.
That is an X. Okay. Apple has also announced a new completely redesigned Apple Pencil. It now magnetically attaches to the iPad Pro, automatically pairing and charging when connected. The Apple Pencil also now features gesture support for customizable interactions. They also announced a brand new MacBook Air with a Retina display. It comes with Touch ID as well as 2 Thunderbolt 3 ports and a headphone jack. What? A headphone jack? It also has 70% less volume than the previous MacBook Air because thinner is always better and retains a 13.3-inch display. Something everybody hoped for, a new Mac Mini, which comes now in space gray, features 4 or 6 core Intel processors and up to 64 gigs of memory. The Mac Mini now utilizes all SSD storage for faster data retrieval and comes with a plethora of ports for expanded connectivity. There are already long wait times for the new iPad Pro. They've pulled Apple Watch OS 5.1 after reports of the update bricking some watches. They have declared the iPhone 5 obsolete, finally. And while iPhone sales remain stagnant, Apple services have hit $10 billion. Also, pretty much everything Apple announced this year costs about 20% more than last year's models. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is my favorite new Apple product. Your choices are iPad Pro, MacBook Air, Mac Mini, all of them, and meh. We've got 32 votes so far, and so far, meh, is way ahead, followed by iPad Pro and Mac Mini. And of course, we know you'll have more to say. So about this, so if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 3 November 18. What's your favorite new Mac product and why? We've got 2 posts in there so far, and we'd love to have you join us and talk about what your favorite new Mac product is and why, and or not. I mean, whatever might not be your new favorite. And then, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And hi to all the folks on YouTube. Have you started yet?
One thing we have to say.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you notice something, folks?
I was going to save that till later, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, I want to get it right out there right now because we can't thank our listeners enough. I mean, you folks here heard us going on for 3 weekends asking to donate. Well, you know what? You guys did it. You did a hell of a job. You got it done early. So this Saturday, we're not asking for money. We're just asking for your questions. And thanking you, folks. Thanking you very much for supporting this program and showing Nick and Steve, along with me, how much you appreciate us coming here every Saturday and being here to answer your computer questions. I know we enjoy it, and we enjoy doing it for you. And you, by reciprocating and making your pledges, have shown how much you care about us.
And we do very, very much appreciate it. Now, for those of you who suddenly realize you missed the opportunity, you can still this week pledge online at jazz901.org and still get all of the cool things. Like if you pledge around soundbites, if you scroll down, you'll see soundbites pledges. There's a USB drive with the Soundbites logo on it. There's a mouse pad. There's a great laptop carrying case.
Yeah, tote case, yeah.
Yeah, which is very cool. And so I think you'll find that you still have plenty of time to get involved, and we want to thank everybody who was so generous and so kind.
It was so great. When Rob sent out that notice, I thought, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that our folks like us that much that they wanted to get it over with before the holidays and, you know, just sit back down and enjoy what we do every Saturday here for you.
Right. And now, if you've got a question, you don't have to worry about us asking if you want to make a pledge.
Yep.
So you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Now, getting back to the Apple stuff, they introduced a bunch of cool things.
Yep.
Yeah, but again, you know what, though? It's,
Well, a lot of people are saying that it's just, again, it's evolutionary, not revolutionary.
Yeah.
They expect
point the fingers at Mac. I'm going to say on the PC side, too.
Yeah.
There is nothing out there right now, both on the PC side or the Mac side, that we can sit there saying, coming up these holidays, oh, I got to have it. I got to have this. Oh, this new box is something I really am pining for. You know, I got to have it. The latest and greatest. It's
right.
Just not there. And it's on both sides of the fence.
Right. And with the Mac, with Apple in general, people have come to expect some wow thing every time there's announcements.
Mm-hmm.
And now these are very cool announcements, very cool updates, very cool products. But because there was no wow thing like
when
they introduced the iPod or the iPhone or whatever, that people seem actually disappointed.
Yeah.
Like they did. There are no rocket ships. You know, there's no flying car. What the hell is wrong with Apple?
I don't know what else to tell you. One of the problems Apple's been facing is that they are, beholden to Intel for the chips. And so there's been a problem getting the lower power chips out that Apple wants to use in the low power computers. And that sort of bolsters a lot of the rumors that Apple's going to be moving to their own chips.
Right.
They're already using an Apple designed ARM chip in the iPads and in the iPhones. And there's a lot of rumors that the low end Macs are going to get ARM chips to make them cheaper. And the fact that Apple can then control the build, they don't have to get, you know, a generic Intel chip where Intel is trying to please all the different vendors and all the different features they want.
Right.
So what Apple can do with their special ARM chips is they can say, you know, leave this part out because we don't need to worry about, you know, Windows this or that because we're only doing this with iOS. So it can make those chips a lot faster, too.
They become much more like RISC chips, which are generally cheaper and faster.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things is that now the iPad Pro and the USB-C port, there were a lot of stories at the time when Apple switched from the 30-pin they originally used to the Lightning port they developed. They wanted to use USB-C, but it wasn't ready yet. The USB-C spec hadn't been finished. You know, there weren't any chips using it yet, so they had to develop their own version, and it became Lightning. And then when USB-C is now starting to get popular in the last couple of years, most devices, even in the Windows world, and Android phones are using USB-C ports. Right. That now we've got to switch again. So everyone is always mad about needing to buy new ports when they buy their new thing. And so we've had a couple, 3 years now with the Lightning. In fact, when did Lightning come out? The Lightning port. Now we got to switch everything again and buy all new dongles again.
Right. Well, that's like I've got here because my Pixel came with a C connector. Yep. So I wound up getting a number of, and they were dirt cheap, converters to take it from A to yep. C.
Right.
Well, and that's what that is right there.
That's been a problem for a long time. A lot of phones would yep. use... micro A or micro or mini A. So mini and micro are different.
Right.
And that's, we have a little dongle here or a pile of dongles here in the studio. DJs can plug in their phones and there's seven or eight different plugs because every company used something different. The EU actually standardized on mini, USB mini B. I think a couple of years ago. Yep. So then a lot of phones switched over to that.
Yeah, but B is common for you know, most of your tablets yep. and everything else.
And now we're universal. Seeing a lot of phones have already started switching to USB-C because then you can use a lot of the same peripherals you have on your computers because the computers have started switching.
And
to USB-C.
It's also a faster charging unit. Yeah. I noticed with my C, I can hook that up whether it's in the car or wherever, and I was down to like 15%. I got a warning. So right. I plugged it into my van and within an hour I was already up to 95%.
Yep.
Yep.
It's like, whoa, that's yep. just a car charger.
Yeah, most right. phone chargers are 5 watts. The tablet chargers are usually 10 or 12. But with USB-C, Apple has a 29-watt charger for their computers. You can plug that into your iPad and charge your iPad even fast. We have a lot of people will mix up their phone and tablet chargers, mm-hmm. and they'll complain that their tablet takes forever to charge, and so they bring it in. Oh, that's your phone charger. Oh, I wondered why my phone was charging so fast. Yes, you've got them backwards.
Yeah. So sell them another.
You sell them another tablet charger, so then they can
get
do
a rapid. Yeah, sell them a rapid charger.
Right,
because that's what I wound up doing for my van. Because the tablet I have and the software we use, it sucks a lot of power.
Yeah, bet.
So the rapid charger though at least keeps it 100%, because during the day we're using it constantly to.
You've got GPS going. Yep.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Once we do, and I mean, that's one thing. I love Google Maps. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But Waze has it hands down better because with Google Maps, I can pull onto a street and it goes, "You arrived." And I go, "No, I haven't. I'm still got to go halfway down the block."
Right.
It gets you close.
The problem I have with Waze, and I haven't used Waze in a while, but the problem I had with Waze, it would say, turn left here. Give me a street name.
Yeah.
I think it might now.
Google Maps yes. gives you a street
yes,
name.
Yes, it does. And yeah, you can also see it.
Right.
We used Waze on our last big road trip because it has traffic notices right. and obstruction notices and all that stuff. But it was funny, like every 5 minutes, you know, police ahead or, you know, road work ahead. So I can't use it locally because it tells me that every 5 minutes.
Particularly road work ahead in Rochester, absolutely. But yeah, so there's a bunch of new Apple toys and it'll be interesting to see where they go. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
How
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we've been talking about the Mac announcements. Lots of new features, lots of new capabilities, higher costs.
And in many cases, they kept the old versions of the product around for that lower cost.
Right. But it's going to be an interesting...
And in our store, we've got a lot of yesterday products now.
Yep.
Yesterday, they were the new product. Today, they're not.
Today, they're not. It's going to be an interesting time looking through all of the specs and deciding what to get. Although, yeah. I'll tell you, I've always been impressed by the Mac Mini. I don't know that I'm impressed at that price anymore.
I maxed it out.
Well, I see that, yeah. But even so, you know, it starts at $1,100. So
it starts at $799.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, what we're saying, it's one of the things they said is now all the Mac Minis have at least a quad-core processor, and you can customize it with a 6-core. But it's a quad i3. And
right.
And the last computer was a dual i5, and which is better. Because this is the 8th generation, and the last computer, I think, was 4th generation. The last Mac Mini was in 2014.
Yeah.
It was 1,400.
4 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, 1,400 days ago. There's a company that tracks how many days since the previous releases. So it's been long overdue for an update.
Well, things are equally interesting on the Microsoft side of things. Microsoft raised prices for the retail versions of Office 2019 by as much as 10% when it began selling the application suite late last month. Price increases were similar to those announced in July for commercial licenses sold in volume. Then Microsoft said such licenses would cost 10% more than the ones for Office 2016, with CALS, or client access licenses, which are required for applications to connect to Windows Server and Exchange Server and the like, slated to climb as much as 30%. All these were perpetual licenses, ones paid for with a single upfront fee, which in turn gives the buyer the right to use the software in perpetuity. The licenses, in other words, have no expiration date. Users may run the programs as long as they want. Now, notice that's not supported in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like those of you who are still using Office 2007, you can still use them, and it's quite legal to do so. You're just wide open to all kinds of mischief.
And a future OS upgrade will probably break it.
Will probably break it, but you're still welcome to run it. The alternative to a perpetual license is a subscription. Under that model, customers pay monthly or annual fees to run the software. If payments cease, the software will eventually stop working or switch to a feature-restricted mode. Microsoft sells subscriptions to its application software under the Office 365 label. Office 2019 Home and Student has a list price of $150. This lowest-end retail suite did not change price. It includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, comes in versions for either Windows 10 or Mac OS, and can be installed on only one PC or Mac. The applications do not come with commercial rights, which means they are not licensed for use for work purposes, including at-home work. So if you're working at home, not that anybody cares because people steal all the time.
Yeah.
That's between you and the God. I don't get involved in that. But the fact is, if you are using Windows 10, Windows 2019, any version of Home and Student, you're not supposed to use it for any sort of work.
They used to have a Home and Business version. They apparently don't anymore.
They do. 2019's Home and Business version is $250 list price, 9% higher than the same bundle for Office 2016. It includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, and Outlook, which is Microsoft's email client. This suite comes in versions for either Windows 10 or Mac OS and can be installed on only one PC or Mac. And this license does allow for commercial use. So if you're using this for a business, you need to be using the Home and Business version. Office 2019 Professional, with a list price of $440,
ouch,
is 10% higher than its 2016 predecessor. It includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook, Publisher, which is desktop layout and publishing, and Access, their database. Well, I say database. It's not. Okay. Yeah. We'll pretend it's a database.
Yeah.
Only for Windows 10, there's no Mac OS analog, and installable on just one PC. It also includes commercial rights. The last time Microsoft raised OS perpetual license, Office perpetual license prices was in 2010 with the debut of Office 2010. Microsoft's price increases were seen as a way to push more customers from perpetual licenses to rental-like models of Office 365. In a perfect world, as far as Microsoft is concerned, all we'd have would be Office 365. It's going to be harder to look at licensing for on-premises using perpetual versus Office 365 when compared on purely financial terms. In a July 25th blog post, that's how far back this goes, the company said the price changes will highlight the benefits of our pricing for a cloud-first world. Prices for Office 365, both consumer and business-grade plans, remain unchanged. So are you ready for a subscription-only Microsoft world? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And several stores, including ours, still have the old versions at the cheaper price.
Right.
And if you, like you say, you don't want to feel guilty for stealing,
right,
you just go over to, free Google Docs.
Google Docs, LibreOffice.
Those will do, I'm sorry,
everything you want to do.
The average, all right, tell me if I'm right or wrong. The average student, if they're doing up papers, you there tell me that Google Docs
right.
can't do everything that it needs to do the same as paying, even though it's $150. For a college student, $150 is $150.
Right.
It'll do the exact same thing, and when they turn it into the professor won't know jack.
Well, and the way it actually works is, at least at RIT, RIT students all get access to Google Docs. Mm-hmm. I forget, it's not called the professional version, it's called the
Pro Plus? I keep seeing that for sale.
Maybe, but no, it's good. This is Google Docs.
Oh, Google Docs, yeah.
I forget what they call it, but it's the group version, the business version, which means that you get to collaborate with people. You can, so for example, and I can do most of this with regular Google Docs. So if Dave and I are writing a novel together, we can both have access to the same document at exactly the same time, see what the other one is typing, chat back and forth, mm-hmm. leave notes for each other. We can attach it. This is how I do the news every week. I write the news and then I attach it as an email right from the file menu. File, attach as email.
Yep.
It goes to these two guys. Boom, we're done. And it's all of that is free. You get voice typing. You get everything. There are a few very specialized products that hook into Microsoft Office for certain business models. Yes. That are not available on Google Docs. But for 99% of people, believe me when I tell you, you can do everything you want to do with Google Docs. But if you feel, of course, you can save documents and send documents out as Word documents or as PDFs or as whatever. You can even save them as EPUBs if you're a writer. I've written 3 books on Google Docs, and you can, and I save them as an EPUB and upload them to Kindle, and I'm done.
They sent me, because they're big into using Office 365, and they sent me a few spreadsheets, and I had to do some stuff with it. I just pulled it right on into Google Docs, or the spreadsheet program, and manipulated it and put it back out to it, and they didn't say anything. It's like, okay, I'm using an updated program, doing everything that they can do with it as far as sorting columns and moving stuff around and everything else and viewing it and then sending it back. And, okay. Yeah. And it doesn't cost me a penny.
I was doing some stuff with a guy and showing him some things. And I happened to bring up one of my spreadsheets, which is my portfolio. And he said, oh, man, how long does it take you to copy all of those numbers in every day? I said, no, they're automatic. It goes out and grabs the latest prices and volumes and yada, 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 yeah. yada, and just populates the spreadsheet. So it all happens automatically. And then I've got one that shows little graphs and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's all automatic. And he said, I don't know that Excel does that. I said, I don't know either, but I don't care because I'm doing it now. And, of course, I can look at it on my phone, on my tablet, on my desktop, on my laptop. I can look at it anywhere in the world that
and
I
not
have
paying a penny
access.
For it.
I'm not paying a penny for it. But so, yeah, it's... but if you need to have Office for whatever reason, if you feel you must pay money to get what you would otherwise get for free, then Office, the new version of Office, will cost you 10% more. It's that simple.
Ouch.
Yeah. All right. To the phones. Excuse me. I'm drowning here. Our first caller is Larry from Penfield, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've been planning on replacing my laptop with a Chromebook for several months now, and for one reason or another, and I was especially having a hard time deciding which Chromebook to get. Haven't done it, and this morning when I woke my laptop up from hibernation, the hard drive made an awful noise, which fortunately has quieted down some now, but sounds like a hard drive failing.
Back it up immediately.
Yes.
I'm in the process. I'm about 19%.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you've been backing up every day because you listen to the show and know you need to do that. But one final backup is probably a good idea.
It probably heard you talking about the Chromebook.
Yeah. How old is your laptop?
Maybe so. But I'm wondering, I was going to keep the laptop as a backup or whatever, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering what it might cost me, you know, ballpark to replace a hard drive.
Did you want to do it yourself, or you want to take it to a store to
Well,
do it?
Depends how involved it is.
Yeah, and that depends on the laptop. Some of them are easy to get the hard drive out. There's a door on the side where the hard drive
or
comes
on the
out.
Bottom if it's an HP or whatever. Quite often the door's on the bottom, and you have to put in the new hard drive. So then if you've got the CDs, you can reload the software.
That's the next problem, is most PCs don't come with Windows disks anymore, so you have to download, while your computer's working, you download the installer from Microsoft and put it to a flash drive, so you have something to install from. I had to take a Lenovo apart the other day to mm-hmm. get to the hard drive. It's like 20 screws on the bottom case, and then you have to take the keyboard off to get 3 more screws, and that was really nasty. So, yeah, it depends on your computer and how easy it is to get the hard drive out.
It's an Asus, if that makes any difference.
Well, again, you'd have to flip it over, and quite often you'll see on the bottom of the laptop, it'll indicate where the memory is and sometimes where the hard drive is. And if you're lucky, usually it's just a simple one screw. You pop that out where the hard drive is because you'll see it looks like platters. And it'll show where the hard drive is. You do one screw, the door opens up, and you got to take out a bunch of other screws. Hang on to those screws because you don't want to have a laptop moving it around and not all the screws back in, holding it securely in place.
Because you got to take all the screws out of the hard drive from the mounting sled.
On the side, yeah.
You put your new hard drive in.
But, you know, taking it out and putting it in isn't easy, that difficult. You know, if you're not that afraid of doing that type of stuff, like Nick, he stays away from it. He breaks out in the sweat.
I did my Asus. I replaced the lousy. It's an inexpensive machine. It's got a nice processor, a decent amount of memory, 8 gig of RAM, but it had a very slow, very old, very cheap hard drive. I replaced it with an SSD, and it took me about 20 minutes of swearing and sweating, but I got it done. Stay on the line, Larry. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Larry from wherever he was, Penfield, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Larry from Penfield still on the line. You still with us, Larry?
I am still here.
Excellent. Okay, so, yes, your laptop hard drive is making a horrible noise, and you're in the process of backing it up. That's a good thing. How old is that laptop?
Probably about 5 years.
There you go. That's the average. The average hard drive lasts 5 years. So you're there. So back everything up. Make sure you've got a good backup of everything. You could also,
how do I make sure I've got a good backup?
Well, you want to check it. If you're, if you're doing a backup, what are you backing up to?
Portable drive.
Well, no, you know, go look at the portable drive and see that things are there.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, though, Larry. Don't worry about backing up programs. Programs will do you no good backing them up. The data.
Yeah, it's your data.
The data is the one prime thing that you have to worry about. Whether, say, in a program, say, if you were using a checking, like QuickBooks or something like that, that you save the data. Because when you reinstall the operating system, you're going to have to reinstall all software. So when we tell people to do backup, it's backing up all the data, photos, documents, anything like that. Programs, don't waste your time.
Well, in addition, he's looking to go to a Chromebook, so he can't use those same programs anyway.
Exactly, but the data,
right?
Whether you're going to a Chromebook or a regular laptop, always just the data,
right?
Not the programs.
Larry, are you using Google Drive?
I'm not.
You should be, particularly with a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
You should move all your data up to Google Drive. And the easiest, do you have a Gmail account?
I do.
Okay. So you can log on to Google Drive at drive.google.com with your Gmail ID. And when you do that, you'll see that you've got probably nothing there.
Your Gmail ID is your Gmail account.
Right,
your email
address. You know, larry@gmail.com and then the password, whatever it is. Once you get your document, once you get to Google Drive, one of the things you want to do is under the gear icon, there's settings. And the second thing in settings is convert uploads. And you want to make sure that's checked, because what that does is when you upload your documents and your spreadsheets and your PowerPoint to Google Docs, it translates them into Google's own format. What that means is they don't count against your storage.
What was the name of that setting again?
It's under settings. It's the second one down. It's called Convert Uploads. Make sure that's checked. While you're in there, the fourth one down is called offline. And what that does is syncs all of your stuff to your computer. So if you are ever offline, you can still edit your last, I don't know, however many documents. But what's nice about Google is they give you 15 gig of storage, which doesn't sound like a lot. But anything in Google's own formats, like documents in their format, spreadsheets in their format, or presentations in their format, don't count against your storage. So I've got about 20,000 documents of various sorts up in Google Drive, and I've only used 2 gig of storage.
Okay, so that explains my next question of how to do the transfer. I just do it by putting everything on Google Drive.
Yeah,
just
put it and on convert it.
And your photos, you can put in Google Photos.
Yeah, right.
And if they're below, what is it, 12?
16K.
16 megapixels, they don't count toward your storage either.
Yeah. So I've got about 20,000 photos up in Google Photos. And like Steve said, they do not count against my storage.
They're less than 16.
Right.
You're good.
Right. What's using most of my storage is some PDF, bunch of PDFs and things like that that are just up there for, I don't know why I still even have them, but they're up there. And that's what's taking up my 2 gig of storage because none of the other things are. So it's easy enough to do. All
it's
you have
just
to do
time
is,
consuming.
It's just time, but you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, people find excuses if it takes more than 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, I might have to spend 20 minutes sitting there and selecting all the folders that I want to convert to have it automatically do that.
Yep.
So if I wanted to have somebody replace my hard drive for me, roughly what might that cost for a 500 gig drive?
The cost of the drive is not a lot.
It's the labor to install it, and that depends on the computer.
And the software, because if you don't have the software, the Windows, they're going to have to charge you to get a copy of Windows.
So you're probably looking at a couple hundred to do everything.
Software.
Yeah. It goes back to that you're doing earlier. So you need your Windows license key. In order to reinstall Windows onto the hard drive. And especially with laptops, the license key is often printed on the bottom, which tends to rub off over time.
Right.
There's a program called Key Finder from Magic Jelly Bean, and I've posted a link to it, that will find the product key you need hiding in your registry. So that's the key that will be needed to reinstall Windows on the new drive.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like it's probably worth my while to mess with that.
Well, it might and it might not. I mean, honestly, it depends entirely on how much you really need that laptop once you're on the Chromebook.
And you could think of it as something to tinker with. That
down the road.
Buy the hard drive yourself and
put Libra.
We'll figure out how to install it yourself.
One small Linux.
I guess so, but at the moment, one of my problems is too many things to do. That's why I am.
No, I get that. And the nice thing about Chromebooks is they completely simplify your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I need desperately, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, and the beauty is you hear us talk week after week, Chromebook, I don't worry about viruses, spyware, or malware. Yeah. None of that is, relevant in a Chromebook. So all that's gone, and you don't have to pay for an operating system, because if you leave it on at night like I do mine, it'll update automatically in the background at night.
Right. Yeah, but so anytime while you're using your machine, you may see a little up arrow pop up. And what that says is you've got an upgrade waiting, all you have to do is reboot.
Yeah.
So if you shut it down every night or whatever, and the next time you turn it on, you'll have the new operating system. It really is. It's simpler. It's easier. It's a little different way of working.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to maybe learn a little bit of a new way of working. But the computer is cheaper. The programs are free. The hassle is gone. The worry about viruses and malware are gone. It's well worth the investment. And particularly if your laptop is dying and you're looking to move anyway, as long as you don't have any proprietary programs. I know some friends of mine who are, for example, photojournalists. They do a lot of photo stuff, and they have very specialized programs. Or another friend of mine is a DJ. He has a very specialized program. Well, those won't run on a Chromebook.
But many times there's equivalents that will.
Right. So you either find the equivalent or you're stuck with a laptop. But most other people don't have a problem.
Right. I'm considering an Acer 2-in-1, either 11.1 or 13.3.
Yep.
Any insights on which way to go with that?
Both of those are excellent devices. Honestly, it depends entirely on your eyes.
Yeah.
I have an 11-inch Chromebook. It's not a convertible, but it's an 11-inch Chromebook. And it's okay, but I can't use it for too terribly long before my eyes start to get a little wonky. I have a 13-inch Chromebook, and it's fine.
If you can, go out to some of the stores. A lot of the stores are now starting to carry some of the Chromebooks and test drive them. You know, you can play with the keyboard. You can look at the screen just to kind of get the feel and looks of certain models.
Okay, what about a Celeron processor versus a quad-core?
You mostly don't care, because if you're using Google Docs, 99.9% of what you're doing is happening in the cloud.
If you're editing photos and especially editing video, even if the if that video is from the cloud, you're doing your edits often locally too,
right,
then you would want the faster processor.
Right. But in general, most of what you do is happening in the cloud or, for example, I have a very old laptop, and even the spreadsheets that I do happen quickly enough that I don't particularly care one way or the other.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Google actually has a nice thing on their Chrome web store, the Chromebook web store, where you can filter out the different models, and they have models from a bunch of different brands based on how you're going to use it, what size screen you want, what price, what features. So it's easy to look through it and find what you want for a price range you're in or what type of work you're going to do with it.
And that's google.com/Chromebook.
Yep. I just maxed out the Chromebook Pixel for $2,000.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe more you want to spend.
That's only half a gig of storage. Half a terabyte of storage is $2,000. Because you store everything in the cloud.
Yeah, right, exactly. I will tell, so we only got a couple of minutes left, so if you're on the phone, we'll catch you in the second half. Please stay on the line. We'll be right there with you. But I want to tell a quick story. We don't have enough time, really, to take a question.
I'll tell a quick story.
This week we had Rochester Googles, and one of our members said he got a virus on his Chromebook. I said, I don't think so. But what happened was when he went to Google.com, and he was at Google.com, if he entered a search, it actually took him to some other website for the response. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that sure looks like a virus, but how could you possibly get it? And I thought, oh, you know what? Did you load software on this thing? You know, go into the store. He said, oh, yeah, I did this and that and the other. And I loaded a couple of things for Bitcoins. I said, okay, here we go. Somewhere along the line, during all of that, you said yes to loading an extension. So I looked in his extensions. We looked in his extensions, and we saw that indeed there was this search dot something. I forget what it was called. And we removed that, and the problem went away. So can Chromebooks get viruses? No. Can you shoot yourself in the foot if you're not paying attention? Yes.
People do that all the time.
Just like any other device, if you just keep clicking yes, you may have a problem.
And quite frequently, in fact, Google did it earlier last month, they remove a bunch of malicious extensions, 180,000 extensions.
Yep.
They remove it from the store that they found to be malicious or not doing things that they claim they're doing. And frequently, those malicious extensions are doing cryptocurrency mining.
In the background, on your machine.
So they slow your machine down. Or they watch for you to type in a Bitcoin address.
And steal it.
And steals it, and then empties your Bitcoin wallet.
Yep.
So be very careful about the extensions you're running. And every now and then, go through and look at your extensions and make sure you know what all are there and something didn't sneak in.
And when you're installing an extension, don't add the extra things. Uncheck the install this, install that business. Pay attention, read every screen. That's on you when something like that happens. That's entirely on you and not on the Chromebook or on Google or anybody else. You're the one who controls what goes into your machine. And while the malicious stuff can't get in by itself, you can certainly introduce any garbage you want into your machine. So you want to be very careful about that. One of the nice things in the latest upgrade, though, I have to also say for the Chromebook, is that the Files app, which looks at all the files in your machine, will now also look at Windows shares automatically. So it's really nice to easily move things from us.
Google is cracking down on what extensions can do
to help
stop malicious extensions get in the first place.
Right. All right, that music tells us you wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. And I know there are a couple people on the line. Please stay on the line. We will get to you as soon as we get back. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And once again, let me thank all of you who were so generous as to pledge during our recent very successful pledge drive. We thank you, and you're the reason we get to say this is Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Patient Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon. You were talking about the Chromebooks, and I was wondering if you have seen the latest update that came through.
Yes, the version 70.
Beautiful.
It's amazing.
Beautiful. They made the icons larger.
Yep.
And that's wonderful, and it's a beautiful update, seamlessly very similar to what they did in the last update before they finished it. It's like the last one wasn't quite finished yet.
Right.
So they incorporated all those rounded edges into everything, which is just beautiful. Notifications are easy. Settings are beautiful. Everything they did was just beautiful in this update.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I was very impressed. Again, for those of you who don't have Chromebooks, they update them fairly regularly. And a lot of them are point updates. You know, you had 69.035, 69.036, whatever. But when they update the major number, they just updated to version 70. And they changed a lot of the internal look, as Mark is saying. The icons are a little larger and rounded, and they're gorgeous. The notification area is beautiful. They've cleaned up the way things look, and they've made things more obvious and more interesting. It's really a very, very lovely update, and I was pretty impressed. And again, as with every single update, it's free, and mm-hmm. you don't even have to do anything. It comes down in the background while you're working. And when you next reboot, there it is. You've got it. It's done.
Automatically.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, the only problem, maybe, or say the caveat to that, is that, oh, geez, maybe in 5 years, okay, it won't update anymore, so you got to go get a new one.
Right.
It's going to cost you maybe a couple $100.
Right.
Well, and that's pretty much true of any computer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It won't update anymore, so you keep using XP.
Right, exactly.
I defy anybody to get a laptop that is functional as these are for the couple $100 price range that they are.
Well, that's
in that
just
range
it. That's
and
just
have it.
It
work so well.
Yep. It, again, as we were saying to Larry, it depends on what you use your Chromebook for as to whether or not you need a high-end processor, a whole lot of RAM, whatever that happens to be. I've been perfectly happy. Honestly, I have a 2-gig laptop with a very underpowered processor, and it runs just the same as my 4 gigs with an Intel processor. It's not a problem at all.
Right. If you're a person that likes to run, you know, 10, 12, 18 tabs at a time, well, you're going to have a problem.
Yes.
You know, you could run 2 or 3, maybe
you have
four.
A problem, period. No.
You know?
Right, yeah, right. You've got a problem.
You know, you're not going to be able to do all that kind of heavy work in a basic system. Of course, you're going to have to step up. But, boy, if you just do basic stuff and do a lot of Google Docs, you know, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. There's no – you do not need – for decades, we had, you know, Windows machines, and then people found Linux and Macs and all of that stuff, but they are still a monolithic device. You buy the device, it comes with an operating system, it comes with all the stuff. If you don't have the stuff, you're not using it. And then people began to discover Google Docs, which is all online, which means they can now use it with any device anywhere on the planet.
And as phones and tablets got more common, you want to see all your same files and photos on all your devices.
Exactly right.
That's right. Exactly.
I had a doctor's appointment, you know, your basic six-month checkup kind of thing. And the doctor wanted to ask me about my blood sugar. And I keep track of it. And so I brought it up on my phone, and I showed him the Google spreadsheet with all my numbers on it. He looked and he said, "What is this?" And I told him, he said, "I love this." He said, "It's right. Can I get a copy of that?" I said, "I'll share it to you right now. Boom, boom, boom. What's your email address?" Bang, you've got a copy. He was thrilled right out of my phone instantaneously. And it's not like I'll print you a copy, I'll send you a copy. You've got it. You just click on the link and you're there.
And you shared him the live copy. So as you update it, he gets the updates.
He sees the updates. It's exactly right. And I shared it to him as a viewer, not as an editor. Right. So he can't change anything. But he can view
but
it.
But he can get all the results that he needs to keep
you
healthy.
So now he can yell at you because you had that donut an hour ago.
Exactly right. But yeah, they are quite amazing devices, and they are seriously useful devices. But you do have to, it's like, as we have always said, it's like buying a new car. But in this case, you're buying a slightly different type of car. So instead of buying a station wagon, you're buying a Fiat, you know, or a Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
And so you maybe can't haul, you know, a load of firewood around, but all the normal things you normally do every day. How many times, you know, for the average person, if you don't haul loads of firewood or bricks around, then certainly having a regular a Fiat or a Mini Cooper saves you gas and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why not get one?
Right. And I tell people exactly what you say. Live in your Chrome browser for a few weeks or a month. And if you're getting everything accomplished that you want to get accomplished, you'll be fine using a Chromebook.
That's exactly right.
You know, and I've told so many people that. I said, well, you know, you can check your mail easily. You know, yeah. you can write letters. You can do spreadsheets. You can do all that. And I'll tell you, so many people have been happy and have bought Chromebooks because of that. They lived in their Chrome browser for a few weeks.
Right. Just as long as you can live in the Chrome browser and do, you know, everything you want to do, you're done. You're on your way.
And now you have access on most of these now. There are more and more of them have Google Play.
Yep.
And you can run a lot of them, not all of them, but I'd say probably 70, 75% of the apps you can run in there.
Yep.
You know. So,
if you need to run a phone app on your computer, on your laptop, you can do that now.
So right.
We get people in the store that ask us, you know, between the iPad and the Mac, you know, what's the difference? And one of the differences is, well, the Mac has, you know, 500,000 apps on it, and the iPad only has 200,000 apps on it.
Right.
Oops.
You probably only need 3 or 4 anyway.
Right. But all the games you want, all the productivity stuff, all the utilities, all of that stuff. I mean, you can get, you know, if you wanted to, you could get a Chromebook that's a convertible. That is to say, the screen swings around so it folds in half behind the keyboard.
That might be my next investment after this one goes, is getting something more like that.
Right. And it comes with a touch screen. So you can then say, well, I want a 15-inch or a 13-inch or a 14-inch or whatever it is, and spend anywhere from $300 to, well, you can certainly spend $700 or $800 on it if you want to, or $1,500 if you want to. But, you know, you can spend a few hundred bucks and get a system that is essentially a laptop and a tablet and runs all the Chrome stuff and all of the Android stuff. And a lot of the newer ones also will run some Linux apps. So you pretty much have the best of all worlds.
Right, right. And on top of those apps, that some of them, I say, in that 25% that they do run, some of them say they're not optimized for that particular you know, for
screen
the
size.
Screen size and stuff.
But
yeah,
I've run them, and I'd say a good majority of those still run pretty seamlessly.
Right. They run fine. They just don't look quite as hot as they do on a phone or a tablet.
Exactly. So, you know, most people, like I say, like you said, live in that browser for a little while. And if you can do that, no one says you have to get rid of your Windows machine.
Right.
This just takes the stress off of having to use it all the time.
Right. And I tell people all the time, get yourself a desktop, which is cheaper. You can spend the same amount of money and get more stuff in it.
Right.
With Windows, if you really need Windows, and carry around a Chromebook.
Yep, that's what I do now.
Yep, it works great. Thanks.
Okay, have a good one.
Thanks, Mark. Have fun. Yeah, it's, I'm telling you, spend some time thinking about a Chromebook, prepping yourself to wear a Chrome, to use a Chromebook, and you'll find that your life just gets so much easier. It's kind of amazing. So yeah, absolutely, definitely give that a shot and take a look at it. Like Mark said, like we say all the time, you can very easily just use your regular desktop and live in Chrome. Do the Google Docs and all the other stuff. And see what you can do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Pittsford. Hi, what's up?
No, it's Pittford.
Pittford, yeah. How are you?
That's okay, close enough. Hey, yeah. I got a question about Windows 10 and elderly hardware. I have a Dell Latitude D410, and it's running Windows 10 with 2 gigs of RAM slowly. But it's sort of stuck at version 1709. You won't update to 1803 because apparently the video driver chips on the motherboard are too old for Intel and Microsoft to bother to update. So my first question is, what risks am I running leaving it stuck at 1709?
Well, you don't have the latest security patches, so you have to be more vigilant on the Internet. And likely you'll run into problems with something that sneaks through.
So you need to be much more diligent about keeping your antivirus up to date and all that stuff.
Yeah, and do run your spy, you know, super anti-spyware and malware bytes a little more often.
Right. And you may find if you're using Windows Defender, you might want to stop using that and get something else that will update. If you're still using 1709, you probably want to stop using Windows Defender if you're using that.
Okay. Second question. If I decide to go away from Windows 10, do you guys have any favorite Linux distributions that would work well on that vintage of hardware?
Linux products work generally. How old is your laptop?
It's probably about 10 years. It's a Dell Latitude D410.
10 years.
How much RAM do you have?
2 gig.
2 gig?
Yeah.
Okay. You're at the bottom end of most modern Linux distributions, but there are two that will run very well on your machine. One is called Puppy Linux, and the other is called Damn Small Linux.
Okay.
Both of them give you all the features, but they are designed to run on machines with lower hardware, lower video, less RAM, which is essentially what you have right there.
Right.
And both of those are available. Steve's going to put up links to both of those on our website at soundbites.org, and you'll find that either one of those will give your machine some new life.
All right. Super. I have one other question. I know you guys are real fond of Google Docs and a lot of the what I'll call quote free end quote Google services. My experience is that free just means that the payment is hidden somewhere, and I guess you guys are okay then with sharing the data that's in that app with Google?
You're not sharing anything.
Your data is stored at Google, but it's encrypted.
Yeah.
It is unlikely that Google will be able to read it, but theoretically they could. But that's pretty much true of anything you do.
Right. And you have to understand what they mean by read it. What's happened is because many okay, Ray, hold on the line, would you please?
Sure.
We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Ray from Pittsford, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Al Malutis. Join Ray Serafin and me on the Polka Bandstand Show every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Ray from Pittsford on the line. Ray, still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, so you were asking about sharing your stuff with Google. Well, you're not really sharing it with Google. As such, your stuff is encrypted at your machine, and it goes up to Google, yes, but it's already encrypted by the time it gets there. So the theory is they can't really just wander around and look at your stuff.
Reading all your personal documents without going through, you know, a heck of a lot of work if
See,
they really
want. Yes, here's the deal. The United States government uses Google Docs.
Maybe a recommendation.
Yeah, so, you know, depending, of course, on how you feel about our government, that's either a good or a bad recommendation. But the reality is they've done a lot of the research into the security of it all, and they seem to think it's fine. So, and not just the government, but also the armed forces. So, you know,
it's
if you think
secure.
Of them as a, yeah, so it's a pretty secure thing. And where Google does have the ability to read your stuff is your email. And they actually can do that, but they not a human. And this is, again, all of them do this.
Well, and that's partly the nature of email. It's public. Email
right.
is public. It's like a postcard.
Right. But all of them do this, and part of it is, you know, they flag things like if you were to say president and bomb in the same email, they flag that and send that on to the government. So they do computer searches, algorithmic searches. There's no human that looks at it.
Uh-huh.
But that's the extent to which you are sharing stuff with Google.
Okay, so it sort of depends on Google's promise to be good.
Right.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Super. Thank you much. I appreciate the advice for Puppy Linux and VMSpy Linux, and I will give them a try.
All right. Thanks, Ray.
All right. Thanks.
And one of the things to keep track of is when you do share a document with someone, because it's so convenient to do so,
yeah.
You make sure you share it with the right person. You make sure you share it with the right
with the right
with
rights.
The correct rights. Yeah, do they have editing ability or is it read only? There was a problem in Dropbox a few years ago where apparently the permission flag got lost and anything you shared was suddenly shared with everybody anywhere.
Yeah.
Oops.
When you share something with someone, you enter their name if they're in your contact list, or you enter the email address. So make sure you get that right. And you have a choice. You can say they can edit the document, they can comment on the document but not edit it,
mm-hmm.
or they can only view it and not comment or edit. So that's actually a pretty nice deal.
Yeah,
actually.
Got it covered all the way around.
It's not as big a deal because Nick and I are sitting next to each other, but right. I can watch him type in the Google Doc on my computer.
Right. right, and I can see him. If he comes in, I see him typing. I get a little flag that says, yep. This is Steve, and I see his picture, and it's very – there he is. And it's easy enough to see what's going on. There he is right there with me.
You're pink for – or are they all pink?
No, the first person in is pink. The next person is – there's a standard set of colors, and I don't remember what they all are. Stop, stop, stop.
Now, boys, come on.
Stop. Okay, if we're going to go into a battle on this.
You can make it read only.
Yeah. Ultimately, yes, I win. Ultimately, I win. So we'll stop that. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Mike from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hey, guys. Love your show.
Thanks.
I was calling up to, I have a laptop that it's basically just for play, and I have Linux Mint on it, and I like playing with the terminal, and I like programming with Python, and just kind of messing around with it in general. And lately, I was thinking about getting a Chromebook, and a couple of questions. One is it possible to install Linux operating system on the Chromebook? Is it worth it? And I also wondered what you thought of the Google Pixel book. Sorry if I repeated questions that other people have asked.
But. No, it's fine. First, I'm a Linux user. I use Ubuntu, but I'm a Linux user, have been for 20 years. Love it. I don't know that I would install Linux on a Chromebook. You can, certain models, you certainly can. Obviously, it's going to be one of the higher-end models. Right, because you want at least 4 gigs of RAM. You want a decent processor. You may want to replace the hard drive because many of them are only 16 or 32 gig. You may want to replace that with a 250 gig SSD drive. It's not a lot of money these days.
And the Chrome OS is based on Linux already, so it sort of already is Linux.
Right. So if you get one of those higher end Linux Chromebooks anyway. If it's a new one, right now it's still beta right now, but there is the ability to run Linux apps on the Chromebook. As I have honestly never tried programming, I don't know that you can do any programming in Python or anything like that, but you could also, if you get a high enough end Chromebook, you can replace the operating system with Linux if you want to. But on the other hand, at that point, you're now at the level of regular laptops.
Right.
Which you can also buy and then replace it with Linux.
Right.
And again, at that point, you can then be using it as we were saying with Ray, you can just, or was it Mark, with Mark, you can just go into Chrome and do all the Chromebook things right in the Chrome browser. And yet you still now have the ability with a laptop that's probably closer to $400 or $600 to put Linux on it and run all the Linux apps and do your Python programming and all that stuff.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very good. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Have fun.
What do you think of the Google Pixel book?
I think the Google Pixel book is amazing. I certainly am not going to buy one myself because it's a little outside my personal price range.
Yeah.
But it's a very cool thing. I do. It's designed to be the reference model. That is to say, Google put it out and said, here's what we think a Chromebook should look like and should work. I mean, internally, not obviously not the look, but internally. And it's a little, I think... for the average user, overpriced.
Well, doesn't the Pixelbook have the quad pixel thing in it? So even though it's like the Retina screen on the Mac, the it's only a 15-inch screen, but it's got four times as many pixels as...
Right. It's a very high-end device.
Yeah.
Most people don't need that, but if you do need that, that's the thing to get. But I do think that most people, if you get it, it's either because you really need it, or you're just interested in the prestige.
Gotta have toys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Have fun.
Appreciate it. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I would love to own a Pixelbook, but that's not something that's going to be in my future. When I get something, it's probably going to be something like the Acer or maybe the Dell Inspiron, although that's a 14-inch. I like the 15-inch. I have to admit it.
Well, what's an inch between friends?
Sometimes it's...
Enough.
Enough. But Acer has a couple of different 15-inch Chromebooks, and it's a pretty nice idea. They also have the Spin, which is the one that folds over backwards, and it's a pretty nice set of stuff. All right, to the phones again. Robin, our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve, what's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I am the owner of a Google group for a writing group.
Oh, nice.
And everything was set up. We had a folder on it for dropping in minutes from our meetings.
Right.
That folder is no longer visible in the at the group site. It's on my drive. I've done everything that I did before to get it to show up. I've basically shared it with the group.
Right.
But now I don't have it on within the group, and I don't know how to get it back there.
Yeah, this is actually a known issue. Google says they're working on it.
Wait and see.
I'm not sure what you can do beyond
a new shared folder and copy everything into it.
That's the only thing I can think of. And it's been an issue for a while. They fixed it and it comes back, and they fix it and it comes back. But there's not, as far as I know, an official fix yet. So I think Steve's right. I think what you do is you create a new folder and upload everything to that and see what happens.
Well, rather than basically just start from scratch with a completely different folder and work from there.
Yeah, kind of like. I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. Well, I guess that I had considered doing that, and I just figured, well, if I can't share one, I won't be able to share another.
Well, you could try unsharing that folder and then resharing it.
Okay, I'm not sure how you unshare the folder.
Yeah, I don't have Google groups. I don't have a Google group, so I can't lead you right to it. But so try making a new folder, putting everything in the new folder, and see what happens. You may find that works just fine.
Okay, give it a shot.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, just hope that Google comes around and fixes it.
That's the theory.
Okay. I swapped from Yahoo groups because I didn't like, they were just basically, nobody was working on that.
Right.
So I found a new group, and do you have a suggestion of a different group?
No, I don't at the moment. That's a good question, and I don't have one.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, Google Groups is good for a lot of things, but I have to say that it does. I suppose you could use Facebook, but a
if
lot
you
of
really
people,
want Facebook to see your data,
if no. you really want, Facebook's already looking at all your data. Now, let's talk about things that look at your data.
Yeah.
We know for a fact Facebook does.
Many of the other
they've said they do.
Yeah, many of the other sharing file sharing services like Dropbox and Box.com and Microsoft what's theirs OneDrive. Apple's iCloud Drive, you can share folders to other people as well.
Right. So it really depends on what you're doing. If you're just sharing folders that people can see their data, and you can do that right out of Google Docs.
Right.
But yeah, it's slightly different way to do things. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Mark?
Well, two things, guys. One is somebody asked you a few weeks ago how to get to the system monitor in Windows and get with the Control-Alt-Delete. In Linux Mint, it's called System Monitor. It does pretty much the same thing.
Right.
And you didn't seem to know that, so I thought I'd mention it.
Thanks.
The other thing is I'm running 2006, 2007 vintage Dell Latitude laptops with Linux Mint. I can run Mate or Mate, whichever you want to call it, or
right.
Cinnamon, with no problem. So it can be a lot older than what you're telling people. You still get good results. You don't.
I never said you can't run it on an older machine. I just happened to mention the machine that he had. I'm running. I have a laptop that's at least 20 years old that I'm running. I'm running damn small Linux on because it's a very tiny laptop.
Right.
But you can, as long as the machine continues to run. The problem, of course, is that when they start getting that old, you can have hardware failures, so don't let it be your main machine.
Oh, it's all I run.
Well, good luck. That's all I can tell you. You know, if it dies, then it's dead. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things it's worth mentioning is that if you take the hard drive out of the dead machine and put it in another machine, it boots right up. Well, the hard drive
some do. It depends on whether it's the controller that's dead or the hard drive that's dead.
Yeah.
If the hard drive, for the gentleman whose hard drive was making...
Up, you just swap the hard drive, where you can't do that with Windows too readily.
Yeah, Windows is so tied to the hardware it's on and the drivers that are in it that it's very hard to do that.
Linux is free, and you can do whatever you want with it. So it's very easy to do. So particularly if you're backing up regularly, like every day, and your hard drive dies, you put in a new hard drive, you load the operating system, you load the backed up documents and data, and you're done. It's real simple, it's real easy, and it's all free.
I can't argue.
Can't argue with that.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's people... I get that Microsoft and Apple need... Apple's a little better about it in terms of some things, but I get that they're, you know, they make money by doing that stuff, but man, it's so much easier to do it all with Linux or a Chromebook. It's just... easier, cheaper, better all the way around.
Even when you do it right with Windows, you often have to call Microsoft because the Genuine Advantage product failed because it thinks new hard drive is a second computer you're stealing it on.
Right. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. Once again, thanks to all of you for your generous pledges so that we can continue to say this is Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we remain member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon. Yeah, I guess I've got something which is counterintuitive, perhaps. Lately, I've noticed both my machines, I have a laptop and a desktop, and they're both pretty old. I guess the laptop is about 8 years old, maybe the desktop is about the same, maybe a little bit older. Both of them have been running a lot better, a lot faster than they were, say, 2-3 months ago. And I'm wondering if there was some update to either Windows 10 or perhaps to Chrome that is allowing things to go a little bit more smoothly.
What operating system are they running?
It's 10.
Okay. Then yes and yes. Chrome had an update which changed the way it used memory, made it much less of a memory hog. And Windows itself has done some nicer things to the cache. And to something else that I don't remember, which helped as well. Although, and certainly if you've been keeping up with your antivirus and all that other stuff, that'll help keep it cleaner too.
Okay, that might explain it.
Although most people ran into problems with the latest Windows update. So
well, the latest one, yes.
Well, something to look forward to then.
Yeah, exactly.
One other thing I noticed... I run a super anti-spyware on both machines, and on the laptop it runs very smoothly. And when it starts to delete the malware that it detects, it goes pretty quickly. But the desktop, it takes like 1 to 2 seconds for each item to be deleted. If you've got 2,000 items, which frequently happens, it takes a long time. What would explain that?
Two things would explain that. One is that the hard drive on the desktop is older and slower than the hard drive on the laptop.
Well, they're both good caviar, Western Digital caviars.
Well, and then but it's not just the drive itself; it's also the controller.
Yeah.
Right. And the laptop may have a faster or better controller than the desktop does. There's also the fact that when a machine is about 8 years old, you have a you're closing in on the end of life of that drive. In fact, you're past it.
Yeah.
As we keep saying, Google has an amazing amount of empirical data on hard drives, and the average lifespan of the hard drive is 5 years.
Yeah.
So it is possible that that hard drive is just not as healthy as the one on the laptop.
Okay. All right, I'll go from there.
There you go. Make sure you're doing backups.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, it's that's... Of course, that's the big one. You know, 90% of your problems are solved by having really good backups. Your hard drive dies, okay. Put in a new one, you've got a backup.
Got attacked by malware?
Got a backup.
Yeah.
It's the way to do it, and you need to make sure that you have good backups. And as we were saying earlier, you make sure you have good backups by checking them every once in a while. Go look at, if you're backing up to another hard drive, or you're backing up to thumb drives or whatever you're backing up to, take a look at them once in a while. And we'll see. Okay, our next caller is Jerry. Jerry, where are you calling from?
Webster.
Webster, New York, where life is worth living. What can we do for you?
Yes. Hi, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Question. When you get an email and you have a website with it and you want to unsubscribe, why do they ask you for your email when you've already gotten it originally? I mean, do they sell it later on or something?
Well, they've already got it. So what it is bad programming.
Well, they want to know what email address you want to unsubscribe from their database.
Yeah, but his point is if you get a little link that says unsubscribe.
Yeah.
And it takes you to the website?
They should already know
it. They should already have it.
Yeah.
It's just bad programming.
They should have encoded it in that unsubscribe link.
Exactly. It's just bad programming.
It's easier to make a generic unsubscribe link than it is to make one for each address they sent it to.
Right.
So if you want to unsubscribe, you should give them your email address and you shouldn't see them again at all, I guess.
That's the theory. Well, that's the legal thing. Yes.
If it is a legal company following the law, a legitimate unsubscribe link, then it will work. Never try to unsubscribe from junk mail because it doesn't work. They're already breaking the law in many cases, and they'll just add you to more lists.
Right, you're somebody who actually opens emails. That's gold.
But what if I want cheap drugs and a lower mortgage?
And
did you see the new one for telemarketers calling your phone?
Another scam?
No, when you answer it. You just go answer it. U.S. Marshals fraud line can help you.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. If you get a phone call from a telemarketer, never say the word yes.
Correct.
Never say the word yes. But anyway, Jerry, it's just you should always, if you want to unsubscribe and they want your email, it's just bad programming and you're fine.
All right. One other quick question.
Sure.
A week or two ago, you told us how to find your Windows version. It was a Windows key plus another key or something, I think.
It's in the Settings app under About. We'll tell you the specific build you're running, so to tell if you're running 1709, 1803, whatever.
Okay. But there's another point there that you said you could use the Windows key and then hit another key.
Well, the Windows key will bring up the Windows menu, and then you type Settings to bring up the Settings app, and then you click on the About.
Right. That Windows key specifically brings up the menu.
I see. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. It's a nice little feature, actually, that they give you that key there. The ability to there's also a menu key on the other side, which depending on where you are, brings up different types of menus. That's a nice shortcut, but not everybody uses it. If you've turned your laptop into a Linux computer, that key still works. But of course, it doesn't bring up Windows things.
Yeah.
Brings up Linux things.
So you can also do Windows R, which opens a command prompt. Type WinVer and hit OK, and you'll get the version that you're in.
Right. Holding down the Windows key and typing R is essentially a run command.
Yeah.
And then you type in WinVer, which is short for Windows version, all one word, WinVer, and you now run that command. And that will, Steve is right, that will show you all that information as well. But one of the things you should do if you have a Windows computer, find your key, your installation key, which is not the key on the keyboard. It's the what are they called?
Well, there's the product
key code.
Product key.
Which is not the same as the product identifier, which you can see easily. The product key is hard to find.
Yeah, right. That's
on many machines. It is. There's a sticker on the machine that tells you what that is. Particularly, as Dave said, if you've got a laptop, copy it down now because it may rub off.
Or if you see that key code on the bottom of it, take some clear tape and put it over it.
Right.
To protect it, because as Steve and I both said, constant moving it around rubs it off.
And well, but also write it down somewhere, because if ever have to replace your hard drive, you will want that key code, and if your hard drive is dead, you can't get that key code.
That's where a lot of the companies, a number of companies for a while, where the battery goes, they were putting it in there.
Yep, that's a good idea.
So it was protected. And, not easy for somebody else to steal or, copy down or anything else.
That was another thing on that Lenovo I took apart. It didn't have a user replaceable battery. The battery was part of the bottom case.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just like Apple now.
Not just like Apple now, because it's cheaper that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're just ways of cutting costs. Yeah, I mean, you want something cheaper and then people bitch because, I can't do this or this. Well, yeah, they had to give up something.
Right.
To
this
make
is why
it cheaper.
It's $200 cheaper.
Yeah. Cut corners. You can only do cut corners certain ways.
That's exactly
and
right.
Still have a workable device.
Here's a tip that has very little to do with computers. My Spectrum remote will also turn on my television. And so you have to send it a code and then lock the code in. I then pulled off the battery cover. Stuck a piece of tape on there and wrote the number.
Some of them have little lines on the battery cover for you to type those numbers.
Right.
Put that number
in there and plug it back in. So next time when I change the batteries and it forgets the number, I don't have to search for it anymore. I can just say, it's 400 or
My remote has a system button where you can program your speakers, your cable box, your television, your DVD player, everything, and you hit the one button, it turns the whole system on.
Yep.
It's easier. Cut the cord.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
then you've got the Roku remote, you've got the Apple TV remote, you got your speaker remote and the TV remote.
Right. My beloved bride has become very upset with our Spectrum. It's gotten wonky. The little bulb in the front is no longer facing directly straight. Yeah. It's a little crooked.
You're not supposed to be able to see that,
it's visible.
So just go to the store and get a new one.
She and the cats have dropped it multiple times. I just have to do it. I just haven't done it. All right, that music tells me that you have wasted 2 hours of your life with this thing. Once again, I want to thank everybody who pledged during our pledge drive. We are so very grateful that we get to stay on the air, and it's your generosity that has made this possible. You run this station. You own this station. And you make it possible for us to be back here every week. Thank you all so very much. So we're going to disappear, but don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's fairly safe to keep listening. But we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. And we want to thank you for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. It's right here on the Truly Grateful and truly, truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.